The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor with the Medical Independent. Why are so many school children at home at present instead of being at school?
I think you mean the 14,000 school children who've been identified as close contacts of confirmed cases of COVID-19 who are presently at home self-isolating and being tested for the virus. So I suppose we're just back in school for the last week or so, and it is a relatively high number already. We know in the last week that about 2,000 cases of COVID-19 were detected in under 14-year-olds. So again, relative to the amount of the virus that's in the community and the overall numbers, it doesn't represent an actual big increase in the number of children who are testing positive, but it's the fact that they're back in school and their close contacts are their schoolmates, I suppose, which is causing a lot of controversy at the moment, particularly as schools are finding it very hard to get the requisite advice, and our testing services are becoming a bit overwhelmed as well by the spike in the demand for cases to be tested in the last couple of weeks.
So just to clarify on this, are they close contacts of other school children, or is it that they might have a family member at home who has got a positive test, and then as a result, unless they're vaccinated, they have to self-isolate as well?
These are children who have been in school, so it would have been a classmate who would have been identified as the case. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the index case was picked up in school, but one of their schoolmates essentially has been classed as having COVID-19, so that they've now been determined by public health that they need to stay home and isolate and be tested. So this is 14,000 school children who are under this. Those would include actually as well, there's some teachers as well potentially affected. So yeah, it's a big topic at the moment.
Even though they may be asymptomatic?
Yeah, that's the thing, I suppose. We know that children generally get COVID-19 milder, and a lot of the time they are asymptomatic or they get very mild symptoms. So this is that they're just identified as close contacts. They're going to be tested as well, and a small proportion of that overall figure, 14,000, will likely potentially test positive. We don't know at the moment, obviously, how many of those will develop the virus from picking it up. But if you look at the figures for the last year, obviously, though, that might be with the less infectious strains. We know that less than 3% of close contacts tested in the school setting test positive for COVID-19. So this is a report of over 100,000 close contacts between March 2020 and July 2021. And the percentage in secondary schools was less than 2%, 1.8%, and then it was 2.5% in primary schools, and a bit higher in special needs settings where it was 3.4% positivity among close contacts. There is concerns that now that the Delta variant is the dominant variant, that this might be slightly higher. But again, some of those cases would have been just before the summer break as well, where Delta was in circulation at that stage as well.
Enda McGorman is with us as well, principal of the Mary Mother of Hope Primary School in Dublin 15. Enda, thank you very much for joining us. This is quite a burden for schools to actually have to deal with as well. Have you had experience of this as yet?
Matt, we have, and we have, I suppose, it's important to think of the context here. We have our schools open, and thankfully our schools are opening, and that's what we want. We want our schools to be open is the first thing. And the vast majority of pupils are in school, and teaching and learning is taking place successfully. So I suppose that's the positive note. The alternative to this is schools being closed, and none of us want that. Okay, so I suppose from the first instance, we welcome the fact that we are open and that we are able to remain open. Our school, in our own context here, we're 3.5 hours into school when we got the first indication of a case that turned out to be a positive case. It wasn't unexpected, Matt. We haven't returned to school when numbers were so high in the community. Our schools are microcosms of our community. All human life is here, in fact. You know, so if COVID is high in the community, of course it's going to come into the schools. So that's where the mitigation effects that we put into place are so important. But we can only do it within the context of what's going on in the community. Like, in a sense, with the canary in the coal mine. When things went bad before Christmas in December, we saw it first of all in the schools with the number of cases we had in schools. Our return to school between March and Easter, you know, for those 10 days, we saw huge amounts of cases in schools. So I suppose it's not unexpected when cases are so high in the community that we will see the effects in the school.
But you mentioned mitigation. What sort of things are you trying to do in the schools?
Well, we know, Matt, that hand hygiene works. We know that social distancing works. We know that keeping children in pods and bubbles works. And we know this from what Priscilla's already told us in relation to the positivity rates within school, as low as 3%. So I suppose what we weren't seeing was massive evidence of in-school transmission. But that's precisely, Matt, because we were doing the in-school mitigation effects, and where we discovered a COVID case, we removed the pod in the senior classes, or we moved the bubble where children couldn't be kept in pods where they're very small, where social isolation or being in pods in junior infant, first and second classes isn't possible. So those things work, but the other side of it, Matt, and I know people are impatient and I know people want to get back to norm in a hurry, the other side of that we have to remember, Matt, the only place where there are mass gatherings of unvaccinated, unmasked individuals are primary school classrooms. They are unvaccinated and unmasked. So we have to have contact tracing measures in place. We have to be able to remove close contacts. And the really important thing, I think, to stress here, you were asking about children maybe who don't have symptoms straight away. We found that with Delta, in our experience in March, April, May, that it was on the day 10 we found a lot of our cases were coming forward. So that children who initially on day zero testing, when they're tested immediately that they're identified as close contacts, they are brought back for day 10 after remaining in isolation, and a number of those cases came positive. If those children were in school, Matt, they would be bringing the infection in with them, unmasked, and other children become infected. So that's the reason why we operate the pod system that we do, and that's the reason why we were as careful as we are, and that's the reason I think we have to be patient. We've never had numbers so high in schools as we have right now, in the community, I should say.
Yeah, and tell us, how are the teachers with all this? Well, presumably they feel there's a degree of protection they have because of vaccination.
Certainly the level of anxiety is different coming back to school this September as to what it was last September when we didn't have the vaccine. I suppose what we have learned is that masks, teachers and staff members wearing masks, that works. We hadn't evidence in our school, and we had very little evidence, you know, according to the data, of in-school transmission between pupils and staff members. So that shows us that the hand hygiene, that the pod operation, and particularly wearing masks works. And that we've encouraged all of our staff and all visitors to our school, adult visitors to our school, to continue with that. So that gives us some comfort. Obviously, the fact that adults are vaccinated and our older children, our older siblings in secondary and post-primary schools are getting the vaccines as well, that gives us great confidence as well. But I suppose we still have to remember that the only place in the country where there are large gatherings of unmasked, unvaccinated people are primary school classrooms. And we just have to be patient and we have to be careful.
I want to bring in Orla Hegarty, Assistant Professor of the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy at University College Dublin. Because, Orla, we keep hearing so much about the importance of ventilation. How well has this school system done in installing proper and appropriate ventilation to try and mitigate against the spread of COVID?
Well, I think the first thing people need to understand is this is the predominant way how people are catching COVID. The risk in schools is breathing infected air. And there's two mitigations for that. One is wearing masks, and the other one is keeping the air clean. And there's lots of tools that are available to do that and to manage that. But the message to the schools hasn't been clear on that. The schools last year did a lot of overventilating, probably with windows open and being very cold, and that's not sustainable this year. And it's probably not enough in some cases, given that Delta is twice as transmissible, and the community cases are about 20 times the level when the schools went back last year. So there's a much higher risk this year, and not every tool is being used, I suppose. The schools have been given CO2 monitors, and they're being rolled out at the moment, and that's to catch inadequate ventilation. But as soon as that's identified, then there has to be some strategy for what happens next, you know, across America.
Orla, you just brought up something there that I was actually wondering about, and I just want you to clarify that again. The reason for the CO2 monitors is to actually decide if there's adequate ventilation or not. So what happens if the CO2 monitor actually sees that there isn't adequate ventilation?
Well, I think schools need really good advice about this. But it's much broader than just, you know, the ventilation in the classroom, and if the level on the monitor rises, you know, whether children are brought out in the yard for 15 minutes or whether the windows are open, or it could be a situation that a classroom just can't be adequately ventilated or may have more vulnerable children, in which case there should be plug-in filtration brought in.
Okay. Right, thank you for that, Orla Hegarty. Priscilla Lynch, I want to go back to you to finish on this. why is it at the moment that the testing centres are struggling to cope with demand? That it seems now you can't just go for a walk-in appointment, that you actually have to book it online in advance or get a GP to do it for you.
Well, demand has been high in the last week or two, and it just really has surged over recent days, particularly with school cases, so that we're having over 20,000 people a day coming forward to testing, and that was just overwhelming some of the testing centres, particularly the walk-in streams, which people reported having to wait up to 3 hours. So at the moment now, if you do want a COVID-19 test, you have to book your test. You can't just turn up anymore. So that's just to try and manage the number of cases that are coming in. Parents have also been asked that even if the public health response is slow to your school and that you are waiting for a day or two, not just to turn up at a testing centre to book one yourself, to try and wait for the public health advice to get it actually formally booked for you, because that's important so that they can actually track down if cases are associated with schools and how to monitor that particular line as well. And they said, they pointed out to parents as well, it's not going to affect the amount of time that children are currently off school, but for those children who are identified as close contacts, they're still at home for up to 2 weeks. They can be released after a negative day 10 test, but again, that could take a couple of days to respond. So we do know that NESFET are meeting again next week, and we do know that they are looking at advice on perhaps changing that, but again there is kind of disagreement over that among public health, because as was pointed out by the principal just there, some tests are coming positive after 10 days, but possibly they might look at testing at 5 days, or maybe refining the definition of close contact. So at the moment there is a lot of disruption there, there's a lot of demand for testing, but we have passed the peak of the fourth wave, and given the very high vaccination rate of the population, it is hoped that things will stabilise even within schools in the next week or two.
Okay, and just very briefly, is there a role for antigen testing in this as a stepping stone to the need to do a PCR test if there is pressure on the testing centres?
Yeah, this has been a question that has been raised a lot over the last year. We do know that there's pilots ongoing at the moment in the creche settings and in the third level sector, but there doesn't seem to have been very much appetite to introduce antigen testing in Ireland in the school setting. They are doing it in the UK, and they have done it for some time. And there are question marks, I suppose, over the effectiveness of it, how good that they are actually of picking up cases, and whether it is kind of cost effective, and whether it's suitable as well to be asking children to be testing so regularly. But it is something that is being kept under review, and possibly maybe they might look at it again or look at other testing streams to try and make it a bit more effective and to have less disruption. They are looking as well at trying to balance the disruption to kids' education of being out of school and the risk of COVID-19. So there's a lot of factors, I suppose, again at play, and that it will be examined by NESFET next week, and there will be more questions asked, I suppose, about the testing system. Extra resources have been put in place, the HSE has pointed out, to try and support the schools, because there has been a lot of criticism that the system is overwhelmed, and particularly over the weekend that school principals feel that they can't get the information they need to make a decision on whether to keep a class at home on a Monday.
Thank you very much, Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor with the Medical Independent. We heard Orla Hegarty from University College Dublin, and Enda McGorman, principal of the Mary Mother of Hope Primary School in Dublin 15. Thank you to all of you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.